Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
We've had 35 resurrections of the dead. The closer they are to freshly dead, the easier they are to resurrect.
So I see this giant angel, and I asked him his name. It's a financial company, and I realized this angel is here for our finances.
And that's a true literal story, by the way.
These people are charlatans, and it's about time we draw a line in the sand and stop fraternizing with the wolves.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
You're going to think that this is a diatribe on sociology, but it's not. This is Wretched Radio. Instead, you're going to hear an encouragement to start evangelizing based on some sociological insights from the great American sociologist Philip Reif. Died in 2006, born in 1922. One of the 20th century's intellectuals. There are just some people who are smart. Now, they can be really wrong. We've seen that plenty, haven't we? Brilliant people. Stephen Hawking, brilliant, just wrong. Wrong worldview, wrong presupposition, wrong, well, pretty much everything. But brilliant, just wrong. Now, this fellow was not a Christian. Philip Reif was not a Christian. Brilliant, but he was a student of culture, a sociologist. And he was a fellow who really took sociology a step further by being, if you will, prophetic. Doesn't mean that he was a prophet, because that office doesn't exist anymore. But he would take a look at the trends and go, this is where I think that this is headed. And I was reading this presentation by Themelius, T-H-E-M-E-L-I-O-S. Themelius. Or is it Themelius? Or is it Themelius? At any rate.
Yeah, that's the one.
Philip Reif, prophetic analysis of our secular age, because I thought this will encourage us to share our faith. I keep thinking about Bart Ehrman's presentation on why first century Christianity grew from dozens of people. Okay, you could say hundreds of people following if you want to start out at Pentecost and 3,000 people getting saved that day. By the way, when you read the story of Pentecost, read Acts 1 through 20, I believe is where the break is. And this whole issue, in my opinion, about speaking in tongues would be resolved. The Holy Spirit descended as, not actual, but like flames of fire. And he gave people the ability to speak in tongues. And I think that's around verse 6, give or take. You just go down a few verses after that, and it says, and they were speaking in foreign languages, and people from different countries could understand them. What are tongues? Foreign languages. Languages that people understand. Not a heavenly language. Not a language that needs to be interpreted by somebody who has another special gift. It was the gift of speaking in a foreign language so that the gospel then could go all over the globe. And it did exactly that. And so it grew from, say, 3,000 to, I believe the number was 30 million by the 300s. How did that happen? Bart Ehrman, who is not a believer, he said it's because it was not culturally cool. It was not hip and relevant. It wasn't his phrasing, it's mine. But these days, when the world has made its way so into the church in an effort to try to attract the world, we're totally, why would they come to us? We don't do the world the way the world does. We're not as good at it. We don't put on concerts as good as other people do. We just look like a cheap knockoff. And I don't think that it attracts nearly as many people as the attractional model is intended to actually attract. What attracted people to first century Christianity? It was so different. They were pagans, or they worshipped false gods. Idols, and there were thousands of them to choose from. Christianity comes along and goes, just one, Jesus. That's it. You've got yourself a laundry list of deities, and you can pick whichever one works for you. Sound familiar? And Christianity comes along and says, no, one way, one truth, one life. And people found it attractive. Let's learn from Philip Reif, his observations, to see. And I hope be encouraged to be more bold with the proclamation of the gospel. This from Themelius, Themelius, Themelius's Number one, Philip Reif began his career in the 50s and 60s, focusing on the work of Sigmund Freud. Freud has had a huge impact on our culture. The Mind of the Moralist and the Triumph of the Therapeutic. Reif argued that Freud's exploration of neuroses was actually an exploration of authority. Bingo! Who says? How are we to think? How are we to believe? How are we to feel? Why do you have fear? Who are you trusting? Western man was coming to view the notion of divine authority as an illusion. Freud believed that belief in God, as it fades, now he actually did some studying. Freud actually studied, and he noticed that the belief in God was fading. And with that, psychological neuroses were multiplying. And that makes sense from a biblical perspective, doesn't it? Why do people have emotional and mental issues? Now, I'm not talking about something that is looks physiological. Emotional struggles, eating disorders, anxiety issues, suicidal thoughts, suicidal feelings, slightly different. Why? It's because we don't have the mind of Christ. So the further we get away from the mind of Christ, the more maladies we're going to have because our thinking is going to be poorer and poorer. Now, Reif recognized this is going on a lot in our culture, but instead of bringing people back to God for healing, what did they do? Freud sought to heal people by teaching his patients to accept the loss of authority as a positive development. It's good. It's good that God doesn't exist. Trust me, it's good. It's an issue of authority. Now, why is this significant at all for us? We live in a culture. Secular humanism is the religion of says who. This was a message I delivered at an Answers in Genesis conference in Florence, Kentucky recently. That secular humanism basically is all about who is in authority here. That's the first temptation in the garden. Did God really say? Is he really the source of authority? No, I'm going to tell you what's true. See for yourself. That's secular humanism. It's a battle for authority. We're living in a culture that is increasingly awash with the thinking there is no authority, which is making them to feel more and more depressed. Do we need another study to demonstrate that that is true today? That is like the number one observation that I think everybody agrees on, especially teens and millennials, more suicidal, more depressed than ever before. Why? The further you get away from God, the bluer you get. Visit Eastern Europe. Go to one of these places where God is not proclaimed, where Christ and the resurrection are not celebrated, and you see bleak people, sad people. By the way, that's changing slowly, but it is changing in Eastern Europe thanks to Tomorrow Clubs. I'm not kidding. That ministry is having a huge impact, bringing the gospel to poor places in Europe. Many of you support them. If you want to support your own Tomorrow Club, tomorrowclubs.org, outstanding ministry. Because Paul and Cindy Marty went there and they saw the sadness in people. There's a reason. So Reif's observations, they're right. But he continued to observe. In Reif's view, therapeutic ideology, rather than communism, was the real revolution of the 20th century. What? Neo-Marxists were cultural conservatives who still believed in the notion of authority and the idea of a cultural code. Freudian proponents wouldn't countenance authoritative frameworks and normative moral codes. In a therapeutic culture, authority disappears, and we are living in a therapeutic world right now. Everything is about how we're... Go to the checkout line at the grocery store and see all of the magazines dedicated to help you think and feel better. Mindfulness, that trend. It's about casting off all authority, doing your own thing, figuring it out, worshiping your own whatever you choose. And it's not making people happy, but that's the culture we live in. So I saw this sociological observation as being mostly correct, but also an incentive to get on it. Start preaching the gospel. It is so clear why these people, so many people are hurting and lost and struggling and frustrated and suicidal. It's because everything in their life is off. Now, We don't go preach the gospel to them so that their life can be put back on track. We go preach the gospel because they need to be saved from the wrath that is to come, and then we know that God will put their life back on track. Do we not? Furthermore, Reef, a devastating critique of modern culture focusing on our vain Western attempts to reorganize society without a sacred center. According to sociologist Reef, a patently irreligious view of society, which is what a lot of people desire these days, he said, and he wasn't a believer, is foolish and destructive. Furthermore, he said, it's actually impossible. We can no more live without a religious framework than we can communicate without a linguistic framework or breathe without a pulmonary framework. Religion, thought Reef, is in our blood. It's wired into our DNA. Let me try that whistle again. Romans 1. Ecclesiastes 1, eternity written on our hearts, a knowledge of God. He's right. As Reef surveyed the 21st century world, he perceived the sickness had become nearly fatal. He should have stuck around for some of the 21st century now, just 12 years after his death. A sin-sick country that doesn't want the sacred. Does that have gospel implications? Next on Wretched Radio.
Well, Geneva was married, but in her 20s, she had a one-year-old daughter at home that would interfere with her plans to go back to school, and so she was hoping she wasn't pregnant, but she was. I asked her how she felt about her pregnancy. She said, I don't want it, and my husband doesn't want it. She agreed to do an ultrasound, and she didn't want to take any pictures of the ultrasound, but she did look at it for a long time. And so we put it in the file, and then we started walking out of the clinic with her, and she turns to the nurse, and she says, do you have any referrals for medical providers? And I said, yeah, we've got a good doctor. You can go see him. Well, she went to him, and she chose life.
Ultrasounds save lives. Would you please consider supporting preborn.org, providing free ultrasounds, and presenting the gospel to moms and dads, $28 per ultrasound. How many could you support each month? Please support Preborn at preborn.org/wretched.
There are certain things people love getting for Christmas. You know, like new toys, new socks, the newest iPhone. There are things Wretched would love for Christmas too, gospel partners. As this year is coming to a close, would you consider becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner? You see, thanks to our gospel partners, you can find full episodes of Wretched Radio and TV at the home of all things Wretched, wretched.org, among many other resources, for free. Without our gospel partners, there simply is no Wretched. So if you enjoy watching or listening to Wretched and want to continue to do so, would you please consider becoming a Wretched gospel partner? Every dollar you give will be faithfully stewarded. In fact, right now, 83% of every dollar goes directly towards ministry work. Get the details on becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner at wretched.org/donate. Visit wretched.org/donate.
Let's go to Eastern Europe for yet another great story coming out of the Tomorrow Clubs.
Andrea was left by her mother when she was 3 months old. The Tomorrow Club director decided to pray for this girl, and she repented. She used to be a sad-looking kid. Now, seems like that smile never comes off her face.
So many kids are abandoned by parents who need to go to other countries to make a living. They donate their organs. They leave the kids. They are lost physically and spiritually, and the Tomorrow Clubs finds them. They teach them the gospel. They help them to memorize Bible verses. They even will help them with their family lives. It's a magnificent ministry, story after story coming out of Eastern Europe. $30 a month, 30 disciples. Tomorrow Clubs is the ministry. Would you please consider supporting a club of your own? TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Christians are called to make disciples, but where do we start? Hearts for the Lost assists local pastors and church congregations by helping them equip the saints with biblical principles for personal evangelism. They'll fly out to your church to put on an evangelism seminar and then go out into the streets with you to put it into practice. And it's all free. To learn more or to schedule a conference, go to heartsforthelost.com. Heartsforthelost.com.
books of the Bible. The book of Revelation describes visions given to the Apostle John by Jesus Christ concerning the consummation of history. Its symbolic style makes Revelation a mystery to many, but you can understand much by asking what are the setting and action and who are the characters. When you wonder how it's all going to end, God has given Revelation just for you. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
You are living in a third world. This is Wretched Radio. Not a third world country, but a third world, at least according to sociologist Philip Reif, a non-believer who studied culture all the way from the 50s to give or take 2006 before he died. And he defined the era that we are currently living in as a third world. Let me define that for you. To expose the problems of modern society, Reif organizes Western history chronologically according to three cultural worlds. The first was the pagan world, many gods, think Greek, think Rome. Following this was the second cultural world, one dominated by monotheism, think the church, think Christianity. We'll call it the first century, but really just exploding huge in the 300s. That's the predominant worldview that existed for give or take 14 centuries. God exists, Bible says, the end. Or later in the Middle Ages, the church says, therefore it's settled. I don't have an alternative worldview. That's it, predominantly in Western culture. So that was the second cultural world. Today, he says we're living in a third world. The third world casts off any sort of sacred framework. No God, no authority. We're going to write the rules. And that is exactly what we are seeing today, is it not? And so the question before us is this. How will we respond? And I thought it was fascinating that Reif, again, not an evangelical, not a Christian at all, he actually said, don't go back. Don't try to reclaim. Don't try to go back to those days that you perceive were better and recreate them. We got to move forward. Now, as a sociologist who is not a Christian, all of his ideas, frankly, just bad in that regard. But we're Christians. And we know the way forward, do we not? A challenge for you. Are you hoping to get America back, Western civilization back, to the way that it used to be during the years of, say, Ozzie and Harriet? Reif says, wrong idea. Because things have changed. The game has changed. The way that people think and process, it's all different. We've got a different history. We've got a different environment. It's all different. And his solutions, they're not even worth studying. But from a Christian perspective, we can look at this and go, well, we know what needs to happen. People have to get saved. And what I found encouraging about this particular presentation on Philip Reif, having a, quote, prophetic analysis of our secular age in Themelius, is that it encourages me to preach the gospel and actually have more courage that our message is so different. Do you ever struggle with the idea of sharing your faith with somebody because it's just so, it's so totally counter to what everybody thinks and believes these days about virtually everything, sexual issues, marriage issues, lifestyle issues, arts and entertainment issues. We're just so countercultural. Bingo! That's exactly what Christianity is, and that is exactly its appeal. And so instead of cowering to the spirit of the age that says, oh, don't you dare claim to say that there's a way, a truth, a life, I should be emboldened to preach the gospel. Because people hear it and go, that's different. If we are nothing more than another voice in the chorus of worldviews that sings me, 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 or whatever, we're not going to be heard by many. We need to be soloists who sing loudly, louder than all of the other worldviews. This is better. There is one God. He owns you. He has laws. He has rules. And the reason that your life is so miserable is because it is so miserable. And it can never be improved with bells and whistles. It can't. because it's all off. It's as if, oh, this is going to be off. You're putting milk in the gas engine. It's just not going to run. Okay, I guess if it got like fermented and sour and somehow it could possibly, it's just not going to work right. That's what all these other religions are teaching you. And it doesn't feel right, does it? Mindfulness. You're not so mindful anymore after about 10 minutes, are you? You finish your little yoga position and you empty your brain. Well, then you wake up from your little stupor and you've still got the same problems. You've still got the same bad thinking. You've still got the same difficult relationships. Why? Because your worldview is wrong. I know on campuses, that is the single dirtiest, most vulgar, crass word that you can use. You're wrong. And I think it should encourage us to say exactly that, not as jerks, neater, 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 we're right and you're wrong, but because it is true and the world will hear we've got a different message. It's distinctly different from Hinduism and Buddhism and certainly Islam. That we're different. And let that and actually encourage you to preach the gospel and not shrink from preaching the gospel. Philip Reif from Themelius, although Reif had been critical of Christianity early on, by mid-career he was committed to monotheism and embraced the positive role Christianity should play in society without being a believer. Christian monotheism provided the sacred foundation on which Western society was built and gave intellectuals a place to stand and a way to live. So he believed that this framework that the third world is building, an anti-God, anti-authority framework, as people, because it's not just crumbling in the culture around us. It's not just revealed in the movies that we see and the music that we hear when we're driving down the street and somebody has the bass way up and we hear this angry, horrible music. It's not just in the venereal diseases that are on the rise again, the number of suicides that are being committed every day. We see all of that, and we think cultural, but that's also individual. And people are recognizing this is just off. And it's not because people, it's somehow built into our DNA culturally or in an evolutionary sense, but we know God exists. We were fashioned by Him. And it's intuitive. We know it in there. Romans 1. We know God exists. Now, Philip Reif, the secularist, would say, because of that, we need people who will now articulate well this idea that a God exists. Now, here's what he wrote. Reif indicts an array of cultural elites, Freud, Picasso, Mapplethorpe, for their role in poisoning society. The guiding elites of our third world are masters of de-creation, deconstruction, constructing of fictions where once commanding truths were, wanting to forget religion, rebuild society irreligiously from the ground up, to construct a contemporary Tower of Babel, basically. Now, this is Reif. One of the front lines of the contemporary battle is the notion for truth. The third world perspective abolishes truth, leaving only desire. Yet desire proves to be as fierce an authority as any god. Nature abhors a vacuum, so the throne on which God once reigned does not remain empty. It is filled with the most erratic god of desire. So people trying to satisfy self, they desire, they crave, they want to satisfy themselves, think James 4, and they're not happy. It's ultimately futile. We know that, don't we? So what does he suggest? Here we go. The construction of a fourth world will involve a recovery of sacred order and by extension, recoveries of revelation and authority and of transcendent meaning and morality. Recoveries do not enact themselves. They await a people who will speak and act responsibly. Culture crying out for voices that are backed up by a lifestyle that's different. Does that not give you the courage to want to share your faith? Recognizing that there are people, not everybody's in the same place, of course, but recognizing that there are people right now who are like, what am I doing? This is, I'm spinning, I'm going. None of this is like working. I'm not getting happier. I've been chasing after the brass ring. I put it on, and it doesn't fit well. It's cutting off circulation of my finger. Yes, I'm going to keep going with this jewelry analogy. And here we sit with the gospel. This fourth world people, Reif argues, must articulate, he's talking to you and me, really, and embody seemingly defunct notions of truth and virtue. Formidable task? Yeah. In a morally permissive third world culture, nonetheless, in spite of the challenges, there are already cracks in the foundations, observed Reif. Although it once seemed liberating to fire God from his post and live without limits, the third world will soon realize that a world without boundaries is a frightening, not a freeing place. Thus, a responsible people must arise to manifest the beauty of thou shalt and thou shalt not. Game on, Christian! Don't think the world, everybody's just going to be angry at you. A lot of people are, but if you rightly proclaim the gospel, the exclusivity of the gospel, not in a jerkish way, and live a life of service to one another, getting along with one another, living in a sacrificial way with one another, the world is going to see that, just like Peter talks about, wonder, could you tell me about the God, that the hope that lies within you? Game on, Christian. This is Wretched Radio.
SOS Ministries wants to see a movement take place within God's church in Uganda. They want to see God-fearing, Christ-proclaiming churches rise up across the country and impact the whole of the Ugandan society. To reach out nationwide, they have the Ministry of Church Strengthening and the Shepherd's Training Center to thoroughly equip indigenous pastors. But without the consistent support of God's people, none of this is possible. If you can help support SOS Ministries, go to sosministries.com. sosministries.com.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called a fragrant offering. In the Old Testament, God required burnt offerings of meat and incense as a pleasing aroma. These sacrifices foreshadowed Jesus, the perfect offering that takes away the sins of the world. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Again?
Let's go talk about the book we all read.
Books, you know they're dangerous.
Take a look, it's in a book.
So many books, so little time.
Question pour vous here on Wretched Radio. Do you have a fear of speaking in public? Do you ever clam up when it comes to evangelizing? Are you ever worried that somebody might show up on your doorstep and see your messy house? Congratulations! You have a fear of man problem. That's right. Those are all symptoms and signs of a little malady the Bible describes as a fear of man. It is a snare. And it can manifest itself in a lot of ways. For instance, it could be, not necessarily, but it could be why you're shy. Because you just don't want to speak up for fear that you might say something dumb and people will have a lower opinion of you than you have of yourself. That could be the source of your shyness. Fear of man is a big problem for all of us. There's nobody who does not struggle with this issue. Reading a book by Dr. Edward T. Welch, When People Are Big and God Is Small, Overcoming Peer Pressure, Codependency, and the Fear of Man. If you're wondering, what does codependency have to do with the fear of man? They're the same thing. For instance, a woman, she feels like she will not be complete without that guy. She gets married to that fellow because she feels like he is going to be the one who loves me the way that I need to be loved. What is that? Well, it's a fear of man problem. And the person that she's going to fear is her own husband. Why? Because he holds the key to her happiness. And whoever holds the key to your happiness is going to get your fear. Who, indeed, holds the key to your happiness? Answer, God. And we should fear him. We're supposed to fear God. In fact, the higher the fear we have of God, the less you're going to fear men. That is the appropriate person to fear. Don't fear man, said Jesus, but fear God, who can not only kill you, but cast your body into hell. Dr. Ed Welch, fear in the biblical sense is a much broader word. It includes being afraid of someone, holding someone in awe, being controlled or mastered by people, worshiping other people, putting your trust in people, or needing people. So when we are not fearing God, then we've replaced God with people. Instead of fearing the Lord, we fear others. When we're in our teens, we call it peer pressure, but let's be honest, it does not go away. Maybe somebody would call it people pleasing. It's fear of man, and it's everywhere. If you're overcommitted, you can't say no. I don't want people to think that I'm fill in the blank, lazy, not capable, don't care. Do you need something for your spouse, from your spouse? Is self-esteem a critical concern for you? Do you ever fear you might be exposed as an imposter? Are you second-guessing decisions because of what other people might think? Do you feel empty or meaningless? Do you get easily embarrassed? Are opinions about yourself important? Do they define you? Do you ever lie, cover up, make yourself look better? Maybe cover the tracks of some bad steps that you've taken. Are you jealous of other people? People often make you angry or depressed. That's right. There's a controlling center in your life, and it's not God. Do you avoid people? Listen to this. Aren't most diets, even when they are ostensibly under the heading of health, dedicated to impressing others? Ow! Ow! You compare yourself to other people. You put people down. Why? So that you can be up. These are all fear of man problems. And it is a universal problem. The question then is, what is the biblical response? How do we get over this? This particular book gives 6 steps. It's all quite brilliant. Read the whole thing. It's only 240 pages long. Christians need a better response than secular psychologists who would tell you we'll have higher self-esteem, get your priorities straight, learn how to say no, which isn't terrible advice. But if you don't get to the root of the problem, which is fear of man, then you're really just going to learn some survival skills, but you'll never get to the heart of the issue, because God wants to do something more with your fear of man problem. He doesn't just want to erase it. He wants you to fear him more. He wants you to stop believing in people and start believing in him more. This is what God wants to do. The most radical treatment for the fear of man is the fear of the Lord. We need to need people less and love them more. Why are you fearing man? Proverbs 29:25. Fear of man will prove to be a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord is kept safe. We fear people because they can expose and humiliate us. That's what we saw in the garden. They were naked before the fall and unashamed. What did the fall bring in? Shame. Because somebody could make fun of me. Somebody has information on me I don't want others to know. We fear people because they can reject, ridicule, or despise us. And we fear people because they can attack, oppress, or threaten us. Now, if you got somebody doing that, you got to get yourself safe, is what you need. But that nevertheless is a fear of man. And it's still not trusting the Lord. Even if it is a situation like the psalmist experience where there's people at the gates, they're coming to get you, that you should still be fearing God more instead of them. Doesn't mean you don't fight back. Doesn't mean you don't do what's necessary. Doesn't mean you don't go to battle. But it does mean that you do it fearing the Lord. It is a major theme in the Bible. It's not just Adam and Eve. There's not just committing a sin, but it's being sinned against. Consider all the stories in the Bible that talk about that. If a man committed adultery with another man's wife, the innocent spouse would be shamed or dishonored, literally made naked by another's sin. Leviticus 20, 11, 17, 19, 20, and 21. Unruly children brought shame and disgrace on their parents. Victims feeling embarrassment, humiliation, disgrace. It's loaded in the Bible, and it's loaded in our lives. So how do we get over it? By the way, self-esteem is another term for fear of man. It's a pop version of biblical shame or nakedness, secularized shame, if you will. How do we get over it? Well, there's a lot of ways, but one of the ways, the big way, is learning how to fear God more. And this is why when people take out the scary verses of the Bible, they're not doing anybody any favors. Christians need to hear some preaching that causes you to shake and tremble. I saw a tweet from Steve Lawson the other day. Woo! Wow! I'm paraphrasing, but it was something like, when Jesus returns, he's not coming back to play. He's coming back to go to war, to shed blood, and the blood that is dripping from his clothing is from the blood of his enemies, to crush them, to grind them to powder. That's why Jesus is coming back, and you better get ready, because Jesus is coming. I think it was the great theologian Crystal Lewis who said that. When we don't preach like that, we take out those scary verses, we're diminishing people's fear of the Lord, and we're giving them a greater fear of man. This is why expository preaching is so important. You don't want it, okay, I've got a big fear of man problem in my church, so I'm going to give them a good fear of God. We're just going to read Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God every Sunday for 6 years. Not a terrible idea, but it could be a little bit more balanced with what the Bible presents on other subjects to boot. Although reading Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God, do you remember people when Jonathan Edwards preached this flat? Just, you are being held over a flame by a spider web. Or whatever he said about a spider being held over a flame. Flat. Monotone almost. People were shaking and trembling. And that is not a bad thing. Mom and Dad, if your child doesn't fear the Lord, you're actually setting them up for fear of man, and you're setting them up for peer pressure. You're setting them up for failure, experimentation to get the love that they think that they need. And by the way, a point that Ed Welch makes, none of us have the psychological need of love or self-esteem. We've got spiritual needs and we've got physical needs. We do not have psychological needs. The trichotomist would tell you, because we've got body, soul, and spirit, that soul would be spiritual thing, but spirit, that's psychological. No, soul and spirit, one word for the same thing, the essence of you, your spirit and body, two things, and you've only got two needs, spiritual for your spirit or soul, if you prefer, and physical for your body. Emotional needs, we don't have needs. In fact, our need for love actually needs to be replaced with needing to love others. Do you have a fear of man problem? This is Wretched Radio.
Thanks for joining us today. Always appreciate when you choose to spend part of your day listening to us here at Wretched Radio. If my math is correct, and it usually is, this would be the sixth day of Christmas. So, Merry Christmas! Means it's also December 30th, only 2 days left of the year. So would you, could you consider becoming a Wretched Gospel Partner? As we head into the new year, we have the opportunity to reach more and more people with the gospel. That is why we truly need your year-end support. Visit wretched.org/donate. wretched.org/donate for details on becoming a monthly gospel partner or for a one-time year-end gift. wretched.org/donate. And please know, we will treat your gifts as if they are the widow's mite. Honest, 83% of every dollar given goes right to ministry work. Wretched.org/donate. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
What two pastors go through to bring Bibles to their parishioners in the Philippines.
Two pastors, they had to rise up 3 a.m. and walk for 2 hours. And after that, they have to ride a bangka across the river for an hour and then walk again for 3 hours just to get hold of those precious Bibles. They will return in the same way again to bring those Bibles to people whom they are ministering.
That is what they go through. What must you and I do to bring those Bibles to believers around the globe? pick up our phones, call Bible League International. Would you do that right now? $5 per Bible. Could you send 7 per month? Call Bible League International right now, and they will be delivered to the hands of a believer. 1-800-YES-WORD. Just giving you a chance to write that down or to call it. 1-800-YES-WORD to bring Bibles to believers through Bible League International. 1-800-YES-WORD.
There are certain things people love getting for Christmas. You know, like new toys, new socks, the newest iPhone. There are things Wretched would love for Christmas, too. Gospel partners. As this year is coming to a close, would you consider becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner? You see, thanks to our gospel partners, you can find full episodes of Wretched Radio and TV at the home of all things Wretched, wretched.org, among many other resources, for free. Without our gospel partners, there simply is no Wretched. So if you enjoy watching or listening to Wretched and want to continue to do so, would you please consider becoming a Wretched gospel partner? Every dollar you give will be faithfully stewarded. In fact, right now, 83% of every dollar goes directly towards ministry work. Get the details on becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner at wretched.org/donate. Visit wretched.org/donate.
The fruit of the Spirit is evidence that God is working in us. Every believer will evidence this fruit. But it is important to remember that bearing fruit is a consequence of salvation, not a requirement for salvation. God is working in us and through us, and He is the source of this fruit, not us. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Got a question for you. What exactly does it mean to glorify God? This is Wretched Radio. Undoubtedly, you've heard, whether you eat, drink, whatsoever you do, do it all for the glory of the Lord. What does that look like? How do you eat and drink to the glory of God? What are the rules to this so I can do it rightly? If we can understand what it rightly means to glorify God in all that we do, you will lose your fear of man problem. You'll lose the sense of, oh, if I had more, if the people thought better of me, if I could only, if you've got a lying problem, a self-esteem problem, a shyness problem, a codependence problem, you're lacking in psychological needs. If you can learn what it means to glorify God, those things will be shattered. That's the theme of Ed Welch's book, When People Are Big and God is Small. The love bank, the love cup. You've got a love cup. Your spouse has a love cup. You need to fill out what their love language is and then start filling up their cup so that they can feel better. And then they're going to fill up your cup even more. And it's an I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine sort of affair. That's not Christianity. Number one, I scratch somebody's back because it needs scratching, not because of what I might get in return. Second, Jesus does not want your love cup filled. He wants to smash your love cup. He doesn't want to fulfill your psychological desires. He wants to change them. Let's figure out what it means to glorify God and how you might start doing that even today. Ed Welch, to look to Christ to meet our perceived psychological needs is to Christianize our lusts. We're asking God to give us what we want so we can feel better about ourselves or so we can have some happiness, not holiness, in our lives. Think of all of the preaching that goes on these days that does exactly that. And it's not helping anyone. Instead, we need to teach people how to glorify God. Well, we start with understanding, who is God? What is He doing? What does God delight in the most? And the answer to that is His self. The object of God's greatest affections is God. Anything else would be idolatry. Now, here's from Ed Welch. People are most similar to God. In other words, you glorify God, you're acting like God, you're representing God when God is the object of our affections. That's how we act like God. We love Him the way He loves Himself, frankly, as well He should. We should delight in God as God delights in himself. That's what the Sabbath was about. God basically, pardon the vernacular, digging himself. I do good work. I do very good work. And when we enjoy the creation, rightly understanding it comes from him, well, then we're acting like God. I think I just sent out this tweet. Nobody owns property. We're just tenants. I think that's Leviticus 25:23. We're just tenants. We're just leasing the place. He owns it. Let's us have it. When we recognize that and we enjoy it from his hand, then we're acting like him. The Westminster Catechism, the chief end of man is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. Well, what does that look like? We start to enjoy him more, to love him more. Instead of the image of God in human beings taking the form of a love cup or a hollow core of longings, the image is more accurately that of Moses reflecting the glory of God, like the moon reflecting the light of the sun. How can you glorify God better? By loving God more. Not how will God meet my psychological longings. Instead of the image of God being a place inside of you, a hollow core that is passive and easily damaged, you bring glory to God. That's how we live, and that's how you find your fulfillment, and that's how you find peace, and that's how you lose a fear of man. It suggests that our hearts are always active, either bringing in glory to God or to self. So to glorify God, that's a verb. It's not just who we are, it's what we do. So how can you do that? Well, when you parent, you're acting like God. When you work, you're acting like God. When you adopt, you're acting like God. But by the way, adoption, in the biblical sense, is not intended to make us feel good. In the New Testament, adoption's brought glory to the person who adopts, not the one who is adopted. And so when God adopts us, it brings glory to him. That's the purpose of it. As God's holiness is revealed, this is Ed Welch, as God's holiness is revealed in his fatherly love and discipling, our imitation can also be expressed in fathering and discipling rightly. That's how we glorify God. Now, this one might be helpful, and it might cause you to get scalded a wee bit. You need to be doing that in community. We are not individual God glorifiers. We are. But it's collectively that we need to be doing this God glorifying. Ed Welch, in his book, When People Are Big and God Is Small, concludes the entire matter by stating you need to be a member of a local church. You need that. And we in our culture have just a complete aversion to that desire. Recently, there was an interesting study that contrasted the Japanese response to personal trials and the American response. The question was, how do people comfort themselves during difficulties? I'll ask you that question. How do you comfort yourself during difficulties? What do you do? What do you think? The Japanese consistently said, I think about my family. I imagine that my family is with me. The American response, I can do this. I can overcome this. I just need to work harder, do better. Or self-talk. I'm great. This person can't beat me. I'm better than he is. In other words, we live in a culture that emphasizes the individual over the corporate. Yes, God has a relationship with us individually, but we are brought into a corporation. It's the church of Jesus Christ, not of Latter-day Saints, together. And if you have an aversion to that, I'm going to try to lovingly encourage you to get over it, work through it. And when you find a godly church, they'll help you to do that. But find one you must. We use the term self-reliance. Other cultures, some Asian countries, that phrase makes no sense. Or it's a sign of mental instability. You need the church to glorify God. The person should never be self-reliant according to Asian traditions. You should be interdependent. Frank Sinatra, I did it my way, the national anthem of hell. Ed Welch said, I once heard a remake of it, a Christianized version. I did it his way. And he says, please don't think I'm picking nits here, but I simply want to keep my eyes open to the insidious ways we think privately rather than corporately. Do you see my concern with this retitled song? His is better than my, but wouldn't we be more accurate than I? We did it his way. The song, I Did It His Way, still retains an isolated feel. It's Jesus and me. That was even a song by Glenn Campbell. It's just Jesus and me. Nope. It's Jesus, you and the church. Without a comma. You and the church together. Question. How often do we consult with pastors, elders, and those in our church when we're thinking about marriage? A job change. Any big decision. How often do I ask for prayer from the body when I'm doing my job? There's always a lot of discussion and instruction about knowing God's personal will for our lives, but do you ever hear people talking about God's will for the church or even for their family? It's true, isn't it? We're Marlboro Christians. We like to ride the range all by ourselves. The encouragement is, you need to be committing more and more and more and more to your church. And if you are nervous about that, guess what? It's because you have a fear of man problem. How's that for some irony right there? The Old Testament Israelites had corporate festivals. The Passover was celebrated with families. There was a yearly day of atonement for the sins of the person? Nope. The sins of the people. Israelites were commanded to talk about God and his law to their children and each other. The promises were promises to people just as much as to the individual. Likewise, the curses for individual obedience were curses for all the people. Why? Because there was a deeper sense of community. Oh, that word. If you're fearful of joining a church, I get that. Find a good one. And slowly let those individualistic protective walls be broken down so that you can live in community with one another, because as soon as you can stop fearing man for the first time in your life, you'll be able to love people rightly. There's a bonus for you. You will never love rightly when you need anybody. If you can learn how to lose your fear of man problem, you will stop needing anyone, and then you'll be able to love them with the agape love with which God loved us, expecting nothing to be put into our love cup. Are you a member of a good local church? Until next time, go serve your King.